Erotic.
Boom, boom, boom. Well, yes, it's Monday again. I can't understand how the clock just speeds up each and every single week. It is back to your Monday, but that means that it's back to your favorite day of the week because we know what Monday is. It's Meltdown Monday. We hope you had an absolutely incredible week, peeps. It's my pleasure, as always, to be back with you. And seeing as we have been living on the edge of a lightning bolt with great weather here in Manchester, England, today, it stopped. That's the end of summer for us. We are finished. The rain has officially hit and we are on the speedball to Christmas. It's the way that we work here. We have it for about 2 or 3 weeks and that's it done. So for all our beautiful viewers and listeners around the world, count your blessings if the sun is shining, just like it's shining in beautiful Tucson, Arizona right now. So I'm going to bat it over to the AZ, to the big brother across the pond. There we go. We're going to knock it out of the park. Ladies and gentlemen, you know who he is. He's the creation of devastation. It's Brian Clark. Morning, brother. How are you?
Thank you, Tomcat. I am doing great. I'm happy to be here. We have an amazing guest today, so let's get this rolling. We are feeling great with episode 8 here on The Meltdown as we are adding even more international flavor with our special guest today. Some of his outstanding accomplishments include, now listen to this, PWI Rookie of the Year, WCW Cruiserweight Champion, WCW Television Champion, and WCW Tag Team Champion. This man is a second-generation wrestler who had his first match when he was just 16 years old and is now the owner of his own wrestling promotion, New European Championship Wrestling, NEW. From Das Wunderkind to Berlin, ladies and gentlemen, this man has the right stuff. Germany's very own Alex Wright. Welcome to The Meltdown.
Woo! Achtung, Achtung! Here is Alex Wright. Where's my techno music, guys?
You know that I'm going to
add it in, baby.
Thanks for having me on the show. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much.
That introduction was epic, Brian. Honestly, Brian does all that, makes sure that it is beautifully built up. And I just feel so inferior when I hear all these the things that he goes through to put everything together. But when you look at that list of accolades from PWI Rookie of the Year, Cruiserweight Champion, TV Champion, Tag Champion, Alex, you are living the dream, good sir. And now we are so proud to have you on our show. How's Germany today? We all happy?
Yeah, everything is great. Our weather is apparently better than yours in the UK. We have sunshine here.
We're only a couple of hours away. I might just hop on that jet and shoot over.
Oh, no. Just keep it on your side.
That's fine. Oh, I can see it's going to be one of those awesome shows. I'm just going to laugh all the way through this. Brian, kicking off for us, brother. Let's do a nice little deep dive into Alex and find out exactly what he's got to say for us this afternoon. Let's go.
All right, let's roll with it, Alex. I mentioned in the intro there about you being a second generation wrestler. How about you telling us about your legendary father and being around pro wrestling, the industry itself, at such a very young age? How was that for you?
Well, my father, Steve Wright, he started wrestling at the age of 15. Yeah, and he wrestled for about 26 years. Wow. Very successful internationally. He wrestled for New Japan Pro Wrestling many, many years. He wrestled for Stu Hart, which is owner of the father of Owen and Bret Hart, you know. He wrestled in the States for Vern Gagne. And he wrestled for the big companies in Mexico. And he wrestled in India and all over Europe. And I was lucky enough to was being born in that family because I grew up on the road, you know. Right. Like we had a trailer or a caravan right beside the building or right beside the wrestling tent. They were big tents. And for me, the best playground was always the ring, you know, and my dad brought me to the ring when I was like, just starting crawling around. And it was just a great playground, and it never felt to me like training or anything like that. Also, all the famous European wrestlers, they all felt to me normal. You know, it was like a big family. We all were traveling together, and in Germany, for that company where my dad wrestled mainly when I was born, was CWA, was Catch Wrestling Association. That was the biggest German Austrian company over here. And just to get an idea, 1994, they still sold out in Bremen, the arena, which holds like 12,000 spectators. So it was a big deal without having TV. I mean, they were a big deal. And he wrestled many, many years for them. And he's like a 16-time middleweight champion for them and multiple European tag team champion. And I mean, my dad holds many, many other titles. And anyway, he trained me without me, I didn't realize he was training me. I mean, he was playing with me, but I think he was training me also at the beginning. But anyway, I really enjoyed it. And there was never a pressure. My dad was a very good trainer and a very fair trainer, but also very tough. Well, I remember occasion when I said, hey, I can't do that, Dad. He said, such a thing as you can't do that, cannot do that. It's, you know, it doesn't exist. You just do it, you know, and that's, for example, I learned the backdrop in the backyard of our house on the lawn. Yeah, he gave me a backdrop. You take a bump there. If you can take a bump there, you can take a bump in the ring, you know? That's how I learned stuff. My dad, he wrestled all over the world. He wrestled many matches with Inoki. He wrestled against the original Tiger Mask. He taught me all kind of wrestling styles, the Mexican, the Japanese, the American, and the European style, which is also very technical style, the European style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really enjoyed that time being on the road with my dad and my mom. And like you said before, at the age of 16, I had my first wrestling match for CWA. You know, also my uncle Bernard Wright, he was also a very successful wrestler for many, many years. And the foster father of my father, Mr. Ted Bedley, he also was a promoter, wrestler, and he also had a wrestling school, and he trained the British Bulldogs. So, wow. Yeah. So I was in that thing very happy, you know.
I could only imagine. I mean, your entire family, your relatives, your dad, you get into hands-on training. That's unbelievable. I mean, in a way, Alex, you were very, very blessed. I think you know that,
yes,
too.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, on one hand, it was much easier for me to get into the business, of course, yeah, and get training, because in those days, there weren't any, you know, there weren't any wrestling schools.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to break into the business, you had to get some veteran to train you, you know. Right. And so I was very lucky to have my dad. And he, of course, got me my first match for CWA, the tryout. But on the other hand, since my dad had such a big name in the business, you know, there was a lot of pressure on me because they expected a lot. The expectation was very high. You know, and I was very nervous and I didn't want to fuck up, you know, and I wanted to make my dad proud, you know. So, yeah, that was on one side was good. On the other side was pretty hard.
Well, from the legacy that you have been through, your dad, I'm sure, is so, so proud of everything in your heart.
So.
In the US.
Yeah, I hope so.
Sure, I'm sure. So, speaking of your dad, true legend, as you said, works all over the world. From me being an old school tape trader back in the 90s, I remember catching lots of his international shows, as you say, against Inoki and people like that, just training everywhere. You've been able to pull in all different aspects from different legends. So I wanted to ask you, from the legends that traveled through the CWA, who did you get to work with?
Well, I wrestled Fit Finlay many times. I wrestled who did I wrestle, which is, you just talk about the English guys or any guys?
No, feel free. Yeah. So, future legends as well.
I wrestled against Steve Regal or William Regal. Yep. I wrestled Lance Storm. I wrestled JBL. Who else was there? Owen Hart. Then Yamamoto, the tag team partner from Chono was there. Vader was there. Who else did I wrestle? I mean, that's a long time ago. I was 16, you know. I just turned 50, man.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday for this past week.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. No, I mean, everybody who was in CWA at the time when I was there, I wrestled because they had tournaments, you know. They were in a city for about 6 weeks or 2 months, and you had to wrestle every night. So I wrestled everybody there.
How about, do you remember, was it Cannonball?
Yeah, I wrestled him.
Okay,
yeah, I wrestled him.
Okay, Mike Halleck. Yeah, you remember him. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was one of the first matches also.
Oh yeah, okay.
Crazy guy.
He passed away a few years ago, but great guy. I always kept in touch with him.
Yeah,
and always hilariously funny. Yeah. Great stories. Of course, he always talked so highly about being over in CWA. How much he really loved it.
Yeah, he was a regular in CWA for many years. Yeah, nice guy.
Yep. Well, let me switch gears a little bit and change, but moving over from CWA and over to Japan. I wanted to touch on and ask you about some of your memories and opponents during the Best of the Super Juniors tournament in Japan. Do you recall that?
Yeah, that was a very exciting time for me because, right, like I said before, my dad wrestled many years for New Japan. And I was very happy that I had the chance to wrestle for that company. But my dad always told me, hey, listen, if you ever go to Japan, you know, it's tough. I mean, you have to really, you know, take your shit in the ring. Yeah. Otherwise, they just run over you,
yes, sir.
Especially the young guys, you know, the young boys. And at the time, I was 21 when I went to New Japan. So, yeah, I was nervous. But again, I wanted to make my dad proud. And I was looking forward to it. And I went over there with Brian Pillman.
Right.
And in Tokyo, I met Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero the first time. It was very funny because Dean, you know, he's such a nice and good guy, but he's always like that, you know, cool guy, you know, distance to you. If he doesn't know you, he's like, you know, So I was eating in Tokyo Plaza Hotel, and he was sitting like a few tables further, and he just was looking with a mean look to me over, and then he was keeping, he didn't say a word to me, and I said, oh man, and, whoa, that must be a really tough guy there. And yeah, anyway, then I met Eddie, really cool guy, very open, and it was very weird because I didn't know those guys, but they said, okay, we're going to take you out to Roppongi.
Oh.
Party place. And I said, I don't know, you know, just, I go wherever you tell me to. And then we went to Roppongi, and it was, we went to a Hard Rock Cafe Plaza thing. And we were ordering, and they brought the orders, and suddenly Dean and Eddie, and I just met those guys like maybe a day before or 2 days before. They both gave me a kiss on my cheeks. I was like, oh, fuck, what's going on here, guys? Let me go. They were just ribbing me all the time, you know?
It was a different type of tour.
they were just ribbing me all the time, you know? I mean, Dean was ribbing me. I mean, he was ribbing me so bad. He went to a bar with me, and he said, okay, I pay for the drinks. You don't have to pay. So he bought me Shirley Temple, okay? But I didn't know what a Shirley Temple is, okay?
Right.
And I was drinking and drinking, you know, and he paid me more and more to drink. And I said, he said to me, do you feel the liquor in it? And I actually felt it. Yeah, I felt it. I got really sick also because I drank so much from that sweet shit stuff, you know. And he kept, yeah, that strong stuff. And then after I felt really bad, he said to me, and everybody else was laughing, they said to me, okay, kid, now I can tell you there's no liquor in it, you know, in that cocktail. I was just, yeah. Anyway, it was a great time, very tough time. I learned a lot over there.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the time. I mean, I like the culture. I like the Japanese people. They're very friendly and very respectful. And it's a different way to perform in front of an audience because they react totally different than German fans or American fans. But yeah, it's great because wrestling has a very high standing in Japan, just like in the States.
Yeah.
And that's what's very nice. That's what I miss in Germany, you know, the high standing of that sport, because all the athletes which step in the ring every night, you know, you know, they do so much for the sport and for the fans. You know, they wrestle with injuries, you know, they have a lot of pains and whatever. They work 24/7. They have to train and work out and be in shape just to perform at that level. So it would be nice if in Germany the athletes would get the same respect like in the States or in you know, in Japan or Canada or whatever. But anyway, New Japan, really great time.
Well, I mean, that's great because you're actually opening the doors for people in Europe and in Germany, especially, to be able to get that firsthand knowledge from you. So who better to teach it than Alex Wright? I mean, you're the guy. That's it.
Yeah, I really enjoy doing this job, teaching. Yeah. I mean, actually, I'm much longer a teacher now than I was an active wrestler. You know, I started my school in 17 years ago or 18 years ago now here in Germany. Uh-huh. And it's running really well. I mean, I'm always booked ahead like a year and a half. I can't take any students. So there's a waiting list to drop in. And, you know, some of my students already had contracts with WWE, like Fabian Eichner.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's incredible. That must be really cool to have in your heart.
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, and all my other ones, all the students, the former students, they wrestle all internationally or in Europe or, you know.
Well, we're definitely going to come back and touch base about the school because we really want to talk about that. But there were some names that you threw out there from your tours of Japan. Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero. Obviously, you ended up in WCW. Atlanta was bound for Alex Wright. And you faced off pretty much against a full smorgasbord of competition. It was everybody down the line. But was there anybody that you wanted to face when you went over to America that you didn't have the opportunity to?
Well, I mean, Brian knows WCW had like at the end, like 250 guys on the contract. Of course, there were many guys who didn't get to work. And plus, since I was all the time mid-card, I wasn't not working like Hogan or whatever. I mean, I was maybe in a segment, but whatever. I probably would have enjoyed wrestling Hogan just for the fact that I was watching him in Rocky. I think Rocky, was it Rocky 3 or Rocky 4? Where he was
Rocky 3. Rocky 3, yeah.
And I always thought, wow, what a great story. And I really liked it. But on the other hand, I really would enjoy to work Undertaker, you know, or Shawn Michaels. You know, I think we would have had a good match because he had that technical style. Or The Rock. Or I mean, there are many guys out there I wish I had a chance to work. But, you know, you have to do what the office tells you.
Yeah, a lot of times when you know, they put you in a program with someone and it lasts longer than expected, or you don't really get to the next step of a program. There's all so many variables. You know that, of course.
Yeah.
One I want to think about that I did think about was you and Chris Jericho in your first championship win. Mm-hmm. How was that? And tell me, are you surprised that Chris is still active in wrestling?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Chris that he is still active, you know, not only because it takes a lot of toll on your body, you know, I mean, I feel it and he surely has his aches and pains, but also on the mental side to be in the business, you know, I mean, people forget it's still a tough business backstage, and they fuck with your brain a lot. You know, they tell you one thing and they do another thing, and then, you know, all that shit. So being around the business, it's hard. I mean, it's a great sport and I really enjoyed it, but all the backstage politics, you know, I didn't don't miss at all, you know. So a lot of respect to Chris, and he looks good. I mean, really good. I mean, he's still in shape and he still performs at a high level, which is good. You know, I never officially retired, so I do a lot of matches in my school and stuff, but on a regular basis, I don't know if my body could keep up with that.
Yeah,
definitely. He does such an incredible job, doesn't he? I mean, he has just rolled with those punches since I think he made his debut in like 1990 or something like that.
Yeah. And he's like mid-50 right now.
Yeah, but he doesn't look. I mean, if you look at yourself and Brian, honestly, you guys have all found the fountain of youth, and I need to find it. Guys, I need to find it. You need to just point me. Just give me like a map quest or a Google Maps, and it'll be around.
I got the answer, Tom. I got the answer, and I think you're going to have to do it. It's that ice plunge.
Oh no, brother! I told you.
That's it.
And this is for all our viewers out there right now. We are sitting on the cusp, so we're about 12,000 subscribers right now. I've said if we hit 20,000, I'll do the ice plunge.
Oh, good.
Now, don't be promoting this, Alex. Don't be pushing it out.
I want to see
you. Are going to be there subscribing now. We love it.
Yes.
Well, talking about one iconic character in Chris Jericho, I want to touch base on one that we have just sadly lost, and that is the legend that is Sabu. And you had the true honor of being in the ring with Sabu on the second episode of Nitro. Talk to us a little bit about facing Sabu.
Yeah, rest in peace, Sabu. Yeah, crazy guy, you know, and how shall I put it? I wrestled a lot of guys in their first matches when they arrived at WCW. And I remember that nobody wanted to work with Sabu, especially one from the top guys, because he was like, nobody knew what's he going to do next. He was like, you couldn't control him, basically. So there was the fear that, you know, he would injure somebody, you know, was around in the locker room. But I wasn't into that hardcore wrestling. I didn't know anything that much about it. So I knew he was a hardcore wrestler, but I didn't know what big name he had and how crazy he really is. I got a little idea when he showed me his hip, like 2 days before, and it was just blue, the whole hip, blue, black, and all kind of colors. And he said to me, well, the hip is broken, you know? And I said to him, hey, can you wrestle? He said, yeah, that's fine. I can wrestle. And I got along very well with him. He was a very nice guy. At least he was very nice to me. We planned the match, and I thought it was a very good match. I really enjoyed working him. I mean, he did a lot of high flying and stuff like that. And so I wrestled, I think I wrestled him a few times. Yeah, not only that, on Nitro.
I've been back and watched it. In fact, I only watched it again today, and it was just so high paced, and it was just frenetic energy and constant high spots. And he was doing things that nobody else was doing in 1995.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes, we are, as we do, and we did last week, we are sending all our love out to Sabu. So let's parlay from an incredible show on the second episode of Nitro. I know that Brian wants to ask you a veritable array of questions. He has been through the archives. He's trickled everything down to give us the creme de la creme of questions. Let's see where we're up to, Brian.
You're working your live TV at such a young age. Okay, you were what I have in here, my research is telling me that you were 20 years old when you debuted on Nitro. Is that correct?
Could be, because I was with WCW before that. I mean,
right.
I signed with WCW at the age of 18, and they still had Saturday night and Sunday live tapings and the house shows. And then they started having Nitro. Yeah.
Nitro 95. Yeah, so you'll have been 20 because it's crazy that it's the 50th birthday of yourself, which will mean it's the 30th anniversary of Nitro. Crazy thing that it's like, wow, man, that's nuts.
So it being, as you know, like you mentioned earlier, over 250 different personalities and characters under contract with WCW, and that locker room. Filled with so many veterans and a lot of rookies from different parts of the country to parts of the world. I mean, we had luchadors, we had Japanese, Canadian, you name it, we had it. Did you feel very comfortable, I guess is the question, around all the other veterans and all the other talent? I mean, because with your skill set, you fit in just from what I see. Did you feel comfortable around everyone?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that I'm very grateful for the time.
Yeah.
In WCW and having the chance to live in the States, because I really love this country. It's a great country and people. And I'm really grateful to Eric Bischoff that he gave me the chance and gave me a contract. Yeah. And you said about Nitro. Well, I was there then 2 years already in WCW. So I already found my position.
Right.
And the longer I was with WCW, the more comfortable I felt, and I was much more secure in myself. You know, at first you're that rookie, and you have to find your spot in the locker room and all that stuff, you know. And at the beginning was very hard because I was, you know, very young. I'm 18 years, not even an adult in the States. Then I was a foreigner and German. Not a lot of plus points, you know. And the first few months were very tough in WCW, but after a while, you know, I got along with everybody, and they got to know me, and they knew that I'm, you know, I wanted to do my best, and I'm open for criticism, all the stuff, and I just wanted to show that the sport is very important to me, and I always wanted to have good matches, you know, and I think the veterans realized that. So I found my spot, and when Nitro started, you know, I was just excited that I was part of that show, and all the veterans, you know, of course there are guys in the locker room you get along much more than with other guys, right. But I got along, I think, with almost anybody, you know, and if somebody had a problem with me, I knew to handle myself in that situations. I mean, I had to learn it the hard way in the beginning with WCW. I mean, there's many stories out there, but after the office told me it's okay as a rookie to, you know, handle yourself, then I was fine. Because I did a lot of, before I started wrestling professionally, I did a lot of amateur wrestling. I did a lot of submission wrestling. You know, I was weightlifting and all kind of competitions. So there was never a fear in having a confrontation.
You were always as nice as you could be, Alex. I remember meeting you, and you may remember this. It was probably the early 90s. I was working for Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which is Jim Cornette's promotion. You were in WCW, but I remember seeing you up off of Windy Hill on I-75, Lex Sting's Main Event Fitness.
Yeah, exactly.
You remember those days?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good days.
All right. Yeah. Now, did you live in the complex that was really close by there?
I lived in Smyrna, Post Village.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah. And later on, I bought a house in Kennesaw.
Okay.
Yeah. But I still trained at the Lexus gym. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that gym. Wasn't that great?
Yeah, it was really great, Jim. Good times, good memories. Yeah.
I just wanted to bring that little nugget up there, and I thought, man, I wonder if he's going to remember this. But yeah, you were. I know you were busy because you seemed like you were always on the road, and I was getting my feet wet in Smoky Mountains. So yeah, I do remember seeing you there. So good stuff.
Yeah, good memories.
Many techno clubs in Smyrna.
No, when I got to the States, there were not that much techno, but that's the reason why, you know, it worked out for me, because it was something new, it was something unique, it was something special, you know, that was a plus point for me. you know.
It's that European style of music, and me performing all over the world in different events, running different music associations. Techno is just such a massive brand, a massive genre. And for someone as a fan growing up in the UK, to be able to hear some techno, it was like, oh, this is great. We were all getting And to see you in Ringwork, for us as my group of friends, we were all excited when we got to see Alex Wright on our screen. And you made that transition from techno into a very different type of character in Berlin. So talk to us about that transition. What was it? Was it the disconnect with the UK, the US fans a little bit later down the line that you thought you had to freshen things up? What was it that led to the character of Berlin?
So really plain? The truth?
The truth. We need that. Brian.
I lost my hair, so I need to do something else. The pretty boy image, you know, was about to die, you know. No, okay. Just joking. I started out as a baby face in WCW, you know, and the office always said, okay, you're good for the kids and you're good for the grannies, and you know, that's your audience, what you pull. And as I got older, you know, I didn't feel myself as this young kid anymore. You know, I was like 25, and being around a long time already in WCW. And, you know, the dance was in the training, my entrance dance, and it made me very popular with some groups of fans. And it also helped me being very, very quickly remembered by the fans. Mm-hmm. But there was always a part of fans, they didn't look past the dancing. They always, you know, they didn't see my wrestling abilities. And I was brought up in this business by my dad the old school way, you know, being tough. And like I said before, I did a lot of amateur wrestling. I had a lot of many fights in my life beforehand, you know, also on the street. And so I always felt the dancing takes away from the seriousness of my character. Mm-hmm. So one day I said, okay, I need to do something different. Plus I was start losing my hair. Yeah, so I said, okay, I need to do a drastic change, something totally different. And I came up with the idea to do such a thing like a gothic style, old style vampire stuff. And the first time I shaved my head and I dyed my head and all that stuff, my wife was so embarrassed that she didn't take my hand when we were walking through the malls, the shopping malls near Kennesaw. She was so embarrassed. And
I remember when you did it, you looked a completely different person.
Yeah. I mean, most of the guys, the locker room guys didn't recognize
me. No idea. Yeah.
I went in the gym from Sting, and DDP was on the Stairmaster. Really tough, you know, he was really going at it. And I had my sunglasses on. And I came in with a leather jerkin. I stood right in front of him and was just staring at him. And I wanted to see his reaction. And at first, he was not looking at me. You know, he was going pretty fast on the Stairmaster. And then he started looking at me. And, you know, you could see in his face that he's getting really angry with me because he didn't recognize me. And suddenly he stopped and said, what do you want from me? You know, and I said, hey, DDP, it's me, Alex. You know, and he freaked out. Yeah, most of the guys didn't know that's me, you know. And, that's what I intended. And I thought it was a character with a lot of potential.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned goth and vampire. So did it come from a movie? Did the concept come from something that you were seeing at the time?
No, not really.
Okay.
I just, in my time in Germany, I think everything is some sort connected to Germany, like techno. And right. I also was listening to gothic music. Right. And in the dance clubs, they were running around like that, you know, dark and codes and stuff like that. And I did that also in Germany. So I thought, well, why don't I try this? I was, you know, and but it was, the timing was really bad because that would, you remember that was when Eric Bischoff was on his way out and Vince Russo came in, and Vince apparently didn't like ideas which Eric brought in, or he didn't like me. I don't know. But that was the end.
It's disappointing because it had so much potential. I always thought it had so much potential seeing it on our screen. And the presentation, how everything came over. I mean, you had the wall as your bodyguard.
Yeah,
so
it
it
was
great,
good.
Great to introduce him as a character that was just an unstoppable behemoth behind you. You had a mouthpiece. A young lady accompanied you a couple of times to the ring. Just everything seemed to piece together. It just didn't... Not, it, didn't ever sort of materialize to what I thought it was going to be. And that's sad.
Yeah, well, that was backstage politics at the end. You know, I should have saved that gimmick for WWE. I'm sure they would have done much more with it, but that's life, you know.
Well, we're all about the positives on this show, Brian, aren't we? So shall we talk about some positives?
Yeah, we like to hear the stories and the backstories of characters and the development of how you were dancing machine and then you turned it completely where you're unrecognizable, but in a good positive way. I thought it was an amazing look on you. Yeah. And I agree with you, it could have done big business in WWE.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it took me 9 months, you know, to get everything together, but yeah, my wife helped me a lot. She,
I tell you what, as a heel, if your wife won't hold your hand in public, you know you're over, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, on the other hand, she should be very happy because every time I changed my look, she had like a new guy in her bed, you know. Like,
first
I had this hair, then I had mohawk, then I was bald, you know, and all kind of stuff.
Don't be giving my wife ideas, Alex. Don't be giving her. Well, seeing as we're talking about the positives, we're talking about the light side. We're always looking to put a smile on people's faces. A character that always put a smile on my face just for his antics on screen was your very own tag partner, the Disco Inferno. Now, I want to take you both back to a particular segment in the year 2000 where the Boogie Nights were paying off Chronic. Mm-hmm. You remember this? Do you remember the stopwatch?
Yeah.
Talk to us about that because that was great. That was fantastic. We're going to show it up on screen as well.
Oh yeah.
Let's have a little chat about your interactions as Boogie Nights and Chronic and what the memories are.
Were you asking now, Brian or me?
I'm going to ask you first, and then I'm going to back to Brian.
Apparently, Boogie Nights didn't pay enough money to Chronic.
That's why we're reaping it in now, you see. We're paying off debts right now. We are cashing in those checks before breaking the necks. We know how to do it. It was fun.
Everything we did backstage and all those skits and stuff, they were fun. I really enjoyed working with Alex. I wish they would have done a lot more with it. But even just the little things we were doing still got over. And it's even I looked at one today and it's still funny. I was laughing at just the whole interactions of us together. So yeah, good times, man. No doubt.
Because you know, our tag team was like a comedy entertaining tag team, and you guys were those really powerful, you know, aggressive, intensive tag team, you know. So yeah, it's a good contrast, and bringing that together, it's always good, you know.
I thought it was smart, that storyline, that you only had enough money to pay for half the matches. I thought that was great. That was unique. It was different. It was fun. And unfortunately, the time had run out on the match, but it had also run out on WCW. Now, we know that you were under a Time Warner contract when the WWF buyout came, but was there ever any interest to take a trip to Stamford?
Well, yeah, of course, as a professional athlete, you know, you always think about, well, how is it on the other side? But I think being German, you know, we are very loyal. And like I said before, I was very grateful for the chance, and I already found my spot in the locker room, and everything was good. And so while WCW was going on good, I didn't want to leave that company because I was making good money, you know, and I was almost on every show I mean, I was a regular on the show, and it's hard to be a regular on the show because, you know, Nitro had at first 1 hour, then 2 and then 3 hours, but still there's a max on spots, like maybe 30 wrestlers or whatever can be on the show. So I was very happy. And yeah, at the end, like you said before, I was on the Time Warner contract. There were just like, I think 10 or 12 contracts like that in the company. And I made really, really good money at that time. And the offer, the buyout offer from WWE wasn't that good.
Okay.
I think like it was a half a dollar for the dollar, you know? So I would have lost a lot of money. And I was never in the business for the fame. And I it was just, it's just a sport to me. I mean, there's much more important jobs out there in the world than being a wrestler. You know, it's important because you are entertaining the people and you're making people happy, but a doctor or a fire man or whatever, a police officer, you know, they have really hard jobs, you know, that's real life. And so since I grew up in that sport, for me it was always the important thing to be able to have good matches, you know, travel the world, meeting a lot of guys, improving in my wrestling skills, you know, all that stuff. And it was not about the fame or, you know, if I say it was not about the money, that's true, but still I was a businessman. So that's the reason why I didn't take that offer from WWE. I said, hey, I still have 2 years left on my contract. I will sit it out and see what's going to happen afterwards. And yeah, during that time, I went back to Germany because I thought, well, back to the roots. I was really mentally and physically burned out, you know, physically, just because Brian knows some. I had years, I was 350 days on the road. Sometimes I had 7 matches a day when the TV tapings in Macon or in Florida or whatever, you know. And yeah, it was just, and backstage politics, it just killed all my passion for the sport at that time. You know, because there was so much, politics, and it shouldn't be that much politics. It's like a cancer, you know, that grew in that locker room, and just because a few people, you know, were, you know, starting it. And of course, at the end, everybody had to look out for themselves because, you know, you have to make a living. And it wasn't very, not very nice place to be at the end anymore. And so I went back to Germany, to my family and to my friends. And, you know, I took distance to the sport and, you know, did everything would made me happy. And after a while, it came back to me, the passion for the sport. And then I started my wrestling school and then I started my own promotion and stuff like that. And especially the wrestling school training young kids, you know, and people which are very eager to learn the sport professionally, that brought all the passion back to me. But anyway, in that time, WWE approached me twice and asked if I not want to come to them. And but at that time, I still was not able to perform at 100%. And if I can't give 100% for the promotion and not 100% for myself and especially for the fans, then I have to say no. And I said to them, I'm very grateful, but, you know, that's not my time right now, because I didn't want to end up as many other of my colleagues, you know. I mean, I went over my, how do you say, boundaries a lot of times. Like when I was injured, I kept wrestling with many, many concussions. That's the reason why I ended up being blind. In, when was it? 1997. That was very tough because I bought a house. Next day I got married. And 2 days later I was blind. You know, and
I didn't know this. Talk about this.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah. Because the thing was, the WCW office wanted to make me as the youngest US champion ever. And at that time, I had Deborah McMichael on my side when I was walking to the ring. And I was really getting a real good push. And I didn't want to lose that push or my spot on the show. So I kept wrestling with, you know, concussions. And yeah, we had pay-per-view and then we had Monday Night Show in, I think, in Toronto. And the whole day I already had headaches and I was feeling sick and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, my head felt like it was bursting. And I had to wrestle Prince Iaukea in a singles match. And yeah, I wrestled him and he gave me an enziguri kick to the back of the head. And a blood vessel popped in my head because the brain pressure was already too high from all the concussions. And during the match, I, you know, my vision went away. I finished the match. And while I was walking back to the entrance and through the curtain, I was totally blind.
Wow.
That's it. Yeah. Then I had they rushed me to the emergency hospital and stuff like that. And yeah, hardest call I ever had to make is calling my wife and said, "Hey, listen, I'm blind. I don't know how we, you know, gonna continue our life." Yeah. But I you know, I was young and my body's, you know, absorbed all the blood in my brain. I didn't have to get any surgery. They put a plastic tube through my whole body, through the artery to my brain, and tested all everything while you're awake. I mean, you feel the pushing up there and stuff like that. I wasn't allowed to move 1 week at all. And my wife, after the 7 days, there was the first time I took a shower. She had to carry me to the place and help me because my balance was off and all that stuff. And then I flew back to Atlanta. And then I had to stay 1 month in a dark room and I wasn't allowed to move at all. And yeah, that was a hard time, but I was lucky. I had my vision again. But anything which I'd done at that time, like going the stairs or even going to the restroom, you were afraid if your brain can take that pressure, you know. That's sounds funny, but it actually it is, you know, it's really tough. And yeah, so, you know, I managed to pass that month and by, and then I started slowly again training at home. I was living in Atlanta, you know, the houses are built like wood style, you know. So I took a bump in my dining room. I felt sick for like 2 hours after that. Every day I took a bump again and another bump. So my body gets used to it again, you know, my brain. And yeah, after about 3 months or something like that, I went down to the power plant again, started working out there again, and another 2 or 3 months. And then I went to the office and said, "Listen, guys, I'm ready. I want to go back. I'm fit and I'm excited to showing you guys on the show again." They said, "No, you're never going to step in the ring again." I said, "What? Why? I don't know anything else. That's my life. I mean, that was always my dream, you know." And they said, "No, the doctor said you can die." And I said, "No, you're kidding me." So I was almost on my knees, you know, just please let me back in the ring. I said, "No." So I went to one doctor, to another doctor, and another doctor. I don't know how many doctors I went to. And one day I found somebody who said, "Yeah, it's possible that you step in the ring." And he gave me a sheet, paper, whatever. And I went to the office and said, "Hey, listen, guys, here, it says on this paper, I'm able to go back to the ring." And they said, "Okay." And then they created a contract that thick. And on every page, it was standing like, "Okay, you know, it's your own responsibility when you go back in the ring and you release us from the liability, and you know you can die, you know you can die." On every page, I didn't even read through it. I went just, and then I wrestled many, many years back on the show.
Wow. Yeah.
But in New Japan, for injuries, just that fans get an idea what wrestlers go through. I mean, I was on the tournament for 6 weeks. In the first week, I ripped my inner ligament on the knee, and I wrestled 6 weeks with that. And I broke my, how do you say, vertebrae, mm-hmm. my chest vertebrae. Mm-hmm. It was half broken, and I kept wrestling the 6 weeks. I had unbelievable pain. just for the fans that it's a really tough business, especially for all the European or German viewers of your show, because a lot of fans here in Germany say, "Oh, it's all fake," or stuff like that. Well, it's tough business what we do in the ring, you know.
A lot of people, a lot of fans do not realize the toll it takes on us over the years, the number of surgeries we've had. I was talking with Mark Merrow last week about the number of surgeries. And Alex, you're probably the same way, but just, concussions that we've had, being knocked out in the ring. There's just a litany of injuries that pile up and pile up. And as you get older, you really feel them more and more each day. So that's why we have to do the best we can do and be positive about it. And, find ways, research, like I said, the ice plunge, all these little different things, the diet, the cardio, all those things help you at least stay in balance, That's sort of the way I look at it. And each day is tough, but we keep moving,
You're totally right. You have to stay positive. And if I had the choice again, I would do nothing different. I would still, because it's a great life being a wrestler. I enjoyed every moment from it. I mean, it gives you so much, you know. I mean, there are a lot of downsides, but big part of the business is just, I mean, at least for me, it was just perfect. And
Hey, we love it, man. We do. We did it for a reason. It's because we love it.
And
I'm
as
still.
fans, we loved you for everything that you gave. And I think it's a side of the industry that's probably a little bit more enhanced now, in that we do hear about the injuries, and we are sending all our love out to Zoe Stark, who unfortunately had a horrendous knee injury yesterday on Monday Night Raw. But I was never aware of that story. I was never aware of your blindness. I was never aware of the concussion in that match, and it was never elaborated upon. And it was a case of you were on TV, and then you were off TV, and there was no explanation why.
Well,
And I
then
think it should have been
it's
highlighted.
yeah. It's, then not, next thing is what people also don't realize at home is, even if you're back on TV, it's very hard mentally if you had a hard injury to get back and feel secure in the ring again and be confident again. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a head injury or knee injury, you always have him back in your back and your mind. Oh fuck, if I jump, does it hold? Is my knee okay afterwards? And can I do this? Because if I get injured and I'm out, they're gonna fire me, you know, I lose my job. You know, it's all kind of this mental stuff, it's really hard. And when I was for WCW, and after I started wrestling again after this head injury, I traveled a lot by myself at the end, because the partying time was over for me. You know, I didn't want to party that much anymore. I did a lot of partying in my life. And I traveled by myself. And sometimes, like if in Idaho or whatever, you know, you drive for hours from one city to other and you don't see a house or anything, you know. And it was night, like 2 a.m. And at night, I was driving there. I felt sick from the last match because I got a clothesline to my head. I always thought to myself, will I manage to arrive to the next city? Will I get there? You know, that's tough, you know. I'm glad that it's over. But let's change the subject. I don't want to pull you down. You know,
No, I was
make
hanging on
something
every
happy.
word, Alex. Hanging on every word, and
No,
I
that
was going on
we
that
would
journey
have
with
never known that. Our listeners would never have known that. And that's just, I mean, we took a little deep dive there, and
you.
I appreciate you being so open and honest about that. I mean, that is, it's I'm just so glad that everything turned out the way it did, man. And
Now let's talk about all the sex, the drugs, the rock and roll,
We'll be here for weeks.
I'm just going to sit
the
back and relax for this one. Go
witches.
ahead, boys.
Okay. But I think we need a couple hours for that, right, Brian?
Well, we'll start with our favorite strip clubs and work our way down. Is that what we're going to
Exactly.
do next? The Mount Rushmore of strip
Yeah.
clubs.
Well, let's I'll tell you what, for our viewers and listeners at home, let's keep it within the pro wrestling realm and let's do our Mount Rushmore. So take it away, Tom.
Okay, great. So as we do each week here on the Meltdown, we give our wonderful guests the opportunity to pinpoint their favorites when it comes to different categories. And seeing as we have got one of Europe's most beautifully tailored, prolific, and incredible wrestlers with us this week. We're going to find out exactly who your Mount Rushmore would be of European wrestlers. Alex Wright, I'm going to bat it over to you first, and then I'm going to throw it to Brian. So we need you to pick four. Who would be the four faces that you would have on your Mount Rushmore of European wrestlers?
Well, my dad, Stephen Wright.
Yeah, I'm making notes. We're making notes.
Yeah. Right. Pit Finlay.
Yeah, good one.
Only four.
Only four. This is where it gets
Tony,
really
tough. Tony Sinclair.
Okay, that's a name. Yeah, brilliant.
And either Otto Wanz or Mila Zurlo.
Interesting that you said Otto. Let's bat it over to Brian. Let's see what he's got on his list.
Okay. I mixed it up with a little bit of current, but also a little bit of the past. But all the names that you mentioned, they could easily make this list. I thought about a Tony St. Clair. I thought about a Fit Finlay. A lot of those guys were right there. But I'll give you my four. I'm going with Drew McIntyre, Finn Balor, just because of an amazing career, not just in Europe, but in Japan. Of course, the great Davey Boy Smith.
Yeah.
Definitely. And yes, the British Bulldog himself. And then the one that we did match, Otto Wanz.
Oh, really? Good.
Yep. That was my number four. Wow, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And he told me those before. So we knew you went, yeah, that's, we're all okay, baby. We love him. We love it. Well, we love that.
Brian had more than the new era, and I had more
the classics.
Yeah. And because the listeners and the viewers will, they'll get a taste of both sides of it, which is great. Especially you spent a big part of your career in Europe and in Germany. I mean, who better to give that side of it than you? So,
well, seeing as we're playing games, shall we play the next one right now? And then we can talk all about what Alex has got going on in his life currently. So we play a game. It's called Winner Stays On. So I'm going to give you two names and you just give me your preference, whether it be your favorite, someone that you travel with, that you hold deep in your heart, someone, just the first name that comes into your head when I give you these two names, and I want a reaction. So,
like just a word or a sentence?
So it's going to be two different names, and all you need to tell me is which of the two you prefer. And okay, that person stays on, and then I'll give you another one.
Oh, okay.
All right, let's see who we get. It will build. Right, we're going to start. William Regal or Finn Balor?
William Regal.
Finn takes a coup de grace. William Regal or Otto Wanz?
Otto Wanz.
We'll have a knee trembler right there. Otto Wanz or Joe Hendry?
Otto Wanz.
Say his name and he has disappeared.
He's gone.
Otto Wanz or Giant Haystacks?
Otto Wanz.
You see, I thought we might bring it back with the UK crowd right there. We're keeping with Otto. Okay, great. Otto Wanz or Andre the Giant?
Otto Wanz.
Now, could he go all the way to the end, Brian? Could Otto go?
I don't know. There's some big names coming up. We'll see. Right.
Otto Wanz or the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith?
That's tough, man.
Yeah, man. I know. I'm hitting it hard now.
Otto Wanz.
Sticking with it. Okay.
My goodness me. Harry will not be impressed. Otto Wanz or Gunther?
Otto Wanz.
Now, that was quite quick. Otto Wanz or Fit Finlay?
That's another tough one. Oh, man.
I knew this would get him.
I'm going to dial up Dave right now and find out what your answer is going to be. Let's go.
Oh, man. There's two sides on my... There's two views there. Oh, man. I have to say Otto Wanz.
Oh, This could be it. It could be taking like a full swoop, like a diesel through the Royal Rumble 94. We've got Otto Vance or Becky Lynch. We thought we'd throw a female wrestler in there for you as well. Now let's see who we offend with this one. Otto Vance or Becky Lynch.
Let's do Otto Vance.
Full swoop. Let's go. We've only got four more. Otto Vance or Claudio Castagnoli?
Otto Vance.
Okay. Otto or Drew McIntyre?
Otto Vance.
Otto or Sheamus?
Otto Vance.
Otto or Alex Wright?
Otto Vance.
No!
Wow.
Clean. Wow. Sweet. My editing is going to be so easy on this one.
Do you need an explanation for that also now?
That's exactly where we were coming. What? Tell me. I mean, obviously, it's so wonderful that you hold him in such high regard, but tell me about it.
Well, it's very easy. Otto Vance is the promoter from CWA. Yep. And without Otto Vance, there wouldn't be a CWA and there wouldn't be an Alex Wright and so on and so on. He gave me my first match and... being loyal and respectful, that's the beginning where everything started. That's why
loyalty is everything. What a brilliant winner stays on. That's so good to hear. I wish I'd have put Otto Vance at the bottom. No, you're a star. Thank you so much for that. We're gonna play this next week with Brian. I've got to think of a really weird topic to give to Brian for next week. But that was amazing. Thank you so much, yes. Brian. We're gonna talk a little bit about new stuff. Let me pass it over to you, brother. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on right now.
All right, Alex. I just wanted you to tell us, if you would please, a little bit more about New European Championship Wrestling. I know you have a big show coming up, Wrestle Clash, which is May 29th in Esseldorf with a 6 p.m. bell time. Am I correct on that?
Seven.
Okay. I was close. Yeah. All right.
Did he pronounce Esseldorf right?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Yeah, yes. I looked it up and I was like, I got to pronounce this right. Man, come on.
Tom, didn't he tell you Brian is half German? New European Championship Wrestling. I founded that company in 2009, shortly after I opened my wrestling school, because we talked a lot about backstage politics.
Yeah.
And I really was hating those times where it got so immense backstage, the politics. And I said to myself, if I ever do something like a promotion or whatever, I do not want to have anything like that around. And plus, I wanted to help my students to have a safe environment to develop even more and still get a really professional feedback when they perform. Because Brian knows, when you're in the business, there's a lot of people, they talk shit in your ear, you know, that blow you sugar up their ass just so you can't improve anymore or whatever, you know. And, you know, a lot of rookies have to go through a lot of hard times because some veterans in the indie scenes, they are frustrated and because they didn't make it to the top or whatever. So I thought to myself, hey, I was in the biggest company, you know, I'm fine with myself, what I have achieved in the sport. And I wanted to give something back to the sport because it gave me so much, you know, I mean, that's my life. And, you know, I traveled the world. I met a lot of great athletes, which had the same passion like I did. And I learned so much from them. And I met a lot of different cultures around the world. And so it was really great time for me. And I wanted to give something back. And I thought to myself, okay, how can I do this best? And it was just obvious. I'm going to open my own promotion. So instead of booking a lot of top stars in the scene, I developed characters for my students and rookies, and I put them on the show. Of course, they didn't perform right away like a veteran, but it was fun because they were hungry, you know, they listened to me, you know, they wanted to perform good. And if I would book some other guy who's in the business 20 years and maybe, you know, he comes drunk to the show and all, you know, has a big head and whatever, you know, I didn't want to have that around me. You know, I want to surround myself with positive people and which celebrate the sport wrestling and not all the side effects of it, you know. And yeah, that's why I opened New European Championship Wrestling, and we put shows on every month. We produce TV for Rocket Beans TV. It's a very big TV show here in Germany, YouTube show. And we produced for Fight TV and Fightbox HD, which aired in five continents in 23 countries. So there was a lot of pressure to perform because I just did basically what I learned in WCW storylines and stuff like that, and characters and promos and vignettes. And at the beginning, I was just me and my wife. So, and we had to do 60 jobs, you know, from advertising to graphics to cutting the videos, post-productions, training the guys, planning, you know, the storylines and all kind of stuff. And it grew and grew and grew. And at the end, I have like 60 staff, 60 members in my staff. And shortly before Corona, I said I want to change my business concept because I had an arena where I could do productions at any time. I had an entranceway, I had all the cameras set in, I had two rings in there, and so I could produce at all times. But the thing was, people knew that that New European Championship Wrestling is always around. So I felt, okay, I can't get NEW bigger than it is at the moment, because I only get the local people, like Center Stage in Atlanta. Remember, Center Stage in Atlanta, where they TV taping.
Yep.
You know, if you're always on the way same spot, it you can't grow anymore. So I changed my business concept and I put the NEW on the road, and that's what we're doing right now. And the next thing is, you just mentioned it, is in Esselstorf, Parsberg, close to the city in Nuremberg, where my hometown is. And the last show NEW had, we had about 1,600 spectators, which is for the indie scene in Germany a very, very good number. I mean, that was the highest number in that year, 1,600 people, which is, like I said, very good. And yeah, it's still fun. And I hope that I go back to monthly shows again, because Corona make a little, you know.
Yeah. It's changed so many businesses, Corona and
oh yeah, especially that the government, they forced me to close my school for 1 year.
Wow.
Yeah, 1 year, no money.
Well, it's testament to you that you're back up and running and at such a high
level.
So.
But it's unbelievable that they just tell you, okay, we shut you down for 1 year. You're not allowed to make any money. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yep. I went through that myself, brother. So we're living the dream back again. We are back on the road.
Exactly. It's all past. I totally forgot all the nice masks. No.
But no, it's been honestly, it's been so good to hear about the concept for the company and how it's gone from strength to strength to strength. And we at the Meltdown here have listeners to our podcast and views of our show in Germany, in Austria, in the surrounding countries. So please let us know exactly how they can get in touch with you if their dream is to become a professional wrestler.
Well, the best thing is to write me. info@prowrestlingschool.de, or you go to my website www.prowrestlingschool.de. You also find me on Instagram, Facebook, just Alex Wright. And if you see a guy with a bald head, then it's the correct site.
Either that or you found Steve Austin's page, but the two best bald anybody in the business, we love it.
Because Steve has slightly a little bit more followers than I have.
We'll put all the links up on our screen, on our page. Please do get in touch. If the dream is yours and you want to reach out and grab it, Alex Wright is your man.
Thank you very much.
Alex, I want to just thank you for being on The Meltdown today and having such an open conversation about your career and some of the things that some giving some insight on things that we didn't even know about, which is you just had an amazing career, your whole history. Just really thank you for doing what you have done and taking out the time of your busy schedule, because we, like you said, you're back on the road again with your company, New European Championship Wrestling. We want to wish you all the success and even more success. And just remember, Alex, if you're ever in Tucson, Arizona, you're always welcome to visit the Old West and go horseback riding with yours truly. And we will visit a bygone era. Thank you so much for being here, man. I hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much, Brian. It was so good to see you again. Thank you very much.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us on The Meltdown. What an amazing guest. We took a nice little trip from the AZ over the pond to a little stop at Manchester Airport, all the way over to Deutschland. Yes, we touched base with Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright, and what an eye-opening conversation we've just had with him. I was never aware that he went blind in a match. That is next level scary. That is petrifying to any athlete to go through that. And to come out on the other side with a positive spin is truly the rhetoric that we are promoting here on The Meltdown. We'd like to send out our massive thanks to the legend that is Alex Wright, and all the best of luck as he continues to build his brand new traveling show with NEW. Alex, let's go from strength to strength. And if you don't know, you don't know. Achtung, Achtung! That was Alexander Wright.
What an amazing show. We got information out of Alex that I was never aware of. And for him to overcome some of the issues that he had as far as like losing his sight and coming back and being such a professional. And now he's doing what he loves best. He still is in the pro wrestling business, promoting his own company that is now traveling again. And we wish him nothing but the best. We're so, I'm excited for him. And those students have such a mentor, such a great role model in Alex Wright. So those students should count their blessings and have a veteran like that, that is that knowledgeable. They are lucky. So speaking of luck, how about you and all your friends get ready for the new Meltdown fan page on Instagram? That's right. You can send us questions of the current, the past, the legends, the superstars. Hit us with your questions, and we will answer those right here on The Meltdown each and every week with the Tomcat himself, the man from Manchester, and, of course, the creation of devastation all the way from Tucson, Arizona. We will see you next week, where we'll be right here doing what we do best. Breaking necks and cashing checks. See you next week.